Good morning. This is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners. Today, I'll be talking to Del Cherie Gladden about her many, many books.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's good of you to come and squeeze us into your busy life.
It's been a little crazy lately, but...
You have so much going on. You're such a prolific writer. With how many books do you have published now?
I think it's 28.
Oh, just 28. And you're a mom, and you're working full-time, and
yes,
you're a college student.
Well, I'm on break right now. I finished my bachelor's in December.
Congratulations.
And now I'm deciding whether or not to apply to a master's program.
Good for you.
I kind of needed a break first, though. So,
you go back to work full-time.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those. I was going back to school to change careers, and then right as I'm finishing with my bachelor's, a job comes up in dental hygiene full-time, which is what I've been looking for like the past 4 years.
Things happen like
that.
Like,
well, I guess I'll stay with hygiene for a little while at least.
So where do you fit in your writing?
Well, the last couple months, not a whole lot of anywhere, but mainly, you know, in the evening or on the weekends now when I am not, now that I don't have homework filling up all my evenings and weekends.
Makes
I can at least
difference.
Get a little bit in then. But yeah, it's been an adjustment, kind of trying to figure out how to fit everything in, not just writing, but I mean, just cleaning the house or getting groceries.
Right. Yeah. Saying hello to the children.
Yeah. I know. I have to say, it's really nice. So many places have started doing the online grocery.
Yes.
You can just go pick it up.
Isn't that great?
It's been a lifesaver lately.
Yes.
We'd have no food in our house otherwise.
Yeah, while you're at work, you just shop. I like it. Very good. Oh. Well, as you and I have been talking about, I just finished The Ghost Host, and I loved it.
Good.
And I'm starting on The Ghost Host episode 2 now, because I really like the characters. They're very real and believable.
Oh, thank
but
you.
One thing I was confused about is the genre. These aren't young adult, are they?
They're classified as new adult.
What
is
a new adult?
It's kind of that weird space between high school and becoming, you know, a real adult. And so, I mean, previously, even in fiction, the kind of that 19 to 25 age range for your characters was just like a big black hole. Like, if you wrote characters in that age, nobody knew where to put it. Nobody bought it because they didn't really know it was a thing. And so new adult actually started out as basically like soft erotica.
Oh, I can see that, yeah.
And the, kind of that whole college experimentation. And it's thankfully moved beyond just that. And you can write characters in that age group doing other things other than sleeping around at college.
Right, that's good.
Which is nice. Opens the doors up. So yeah, it's still kind of an unfamiliar genre for a lot of people who aren't currently, you know, involved in it or reading it. It's kind of just in between out there. It's slowly making its way more into mainstream, and agents are still a little hesitant of picking it up. I don't know how many times I've heard agents say, you can't sell new adult. But if you go look on Amazon and some of the best-selling books in fiction, especially in romance, are in the new adult age range. I mean, for those that have heard of, like, Jamie McGuire, her books started out in that college age range. And some of the later ones kind of moved out of there a little bit. But that one and, oh, I lost my train of thought. But there's a couple of pretty well-known series that started in that age range. But most of those authors, nobody would pick them up. So they ended up either going super small press or publishing on their own. And then when they went crazy, then, you know, then the publishers and the agents show up and then they want to get a piece of it. And for some of them, that has worked out. And for some of those authors, they've just kept it themselves and they're doing fine.
Well,
so
I noticed
it's kind
there's
of one
a
of those tricky ones.
Technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very true to that age group with
yeah.
the gaming and the technology and the always that undercurrent of sexual attraction,
mm-hmm.
but not overtly. And that's, I really appreciated that.
Okay.
So on the Ghost Host, I know I'm not a new adult. I'm an old adult. But I loved it.
Okay.
I really was fascinated by it. It's a quick read, great pacing, and the characters are really good.
Thank you.
Now, I'm also a person who likes the paranormal, you know, mm-hmm. watching ghost hunters and things like that. So what kind of research did you have to do to make this, I mean, believable, this paranormal ghost stuff?
Some of it started out, I have a good friend, April Baker, who writes a lot of ghost lore and mythology type stuff. And so I, for quite a few years, I read her stuff. And we'd kind of go back and forth, and she'd, you know, tell me things she had looked up, and then I'd kind of look up things as well, and kind of got interested in the subject from working with her on her books and just kind of beta reading and helping her, like, fact check different things. And, you know, I took a different direction than what she did. Hers is more young adult horror, so it's not, like, super gory, but kind of a little different than what I was interested in. But kind of looking into things with her got me started in where to even look some of this stuff up. And then because I do a lot with mythology, I wanted to bring in not just kind of your basic, here's some things about ghosts and, you know, I've watched a lot of Supernatural. So it was like some of the stuff from that, but then bringing in some different mythologies, and especially in the second book, there's a lot more of the mythology where they're trying to kind of figure out what aspects of the general lore and stories is true and what isn't, and what they might draw from other cultures and other ideas to kind of piece together where that truth actually is. So, like, for the second book, I actually did a lot of research on Egyptian mythology as well as the ghost side of it. So kind of with a lot of my stuff, it's a little all over the place as far as where I get information.
Well, it's interesting because it's a subject that a lot of people think is all made up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But on subjects such as that, like mythology, same thing. There's definite facts that you have to
and that if you don't stick to at least some of those conventions, you push away the readers who like the conventional stuff, but then, you know, you confuse other readers because they don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
So it's kind of, it's interesting to try to balance that sometimes and get, you know, enough of kind of what people are familiar with, but then still be able to bring in new aspects so it's different and it's not, you know, just another ghost story or romance or, you know, whatever it is you're dealing with. There's always that balance between going with the convention and making it unique so it stands out. And that was definitely an interesting challenge with this series.
Well, like I said, I'm a ghost hunter follower, so I ate it up. But you have a bunch of other publications. Also, do you want to talk about those?
Sure. So, like I said, I started out mainly young adult fiction with a lot of mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty much all of my YA series are pretty heavily based in mythology. And, you know, for a long time, that was what I was interested in. That was what I was reading. That was kind of the fan base I built up. And, you know, I don't know if it's just age or my kids getting older, you know, what it is, but my interest just kind of started to move away from mm-hmm. the young adult. I wasn't reading it as much. I didn't want to write it. I wanted to move beyond the mythology. Like, I'd been so involved in different mythologies in my writing. I wanted to do something different. So the first thing I branched out into was just straight romance. Mm. And I kind of wanted to go that direction to challenge myself because it's easy to, you know, add in plot twists and different things when you've got, you know, supernatural crazy stuff going on. You can always throw a wrench in when you need it. But when it's people in regular day-to-day lives, that's a little bit harder. And so it was a good challenge for me. It really made me, like, have to focus on plotting and developing characters and not relying on supernatural things to keep stuff interesting. And so at first it was just kind of something I wanted to try. And then I really just fell in love with the genre and with trying new things and expanding my interest in what I was doing. So I have a couple different romance series or some are just standalones or duets. And then kind of another just break off that I ended up doing. Me and my husband really like mysteries a lot. We like to watch mysteries and kind of got into like some of the Agatha Christie and two of my favorite. I love the Jana De Leon series based in Louisiana. It's always makes me laugh. So that was kind of two new things that I wanted to try. I was like, can I write something that's funny? And can I write a mystery? Because I'm not an outliner. I hate outlining. I feel very boxed in if I write with an outline. But I knew, like, if I was going to try a mystery, I had to at least partially outline, or I just end up with random clues and nothing would fit together at the end. Which is the worst thing when you're writing mystery. So I kind of put both of those together and wanted to write just kind of a cute, fun mystery. And kind of around the same time, I was going back to school and working, and it was like, we've got to find, you know, something that we can get dinners, because it, you know, when you're getting home at like 6 and the kids are hungry, and I hate having to make my husband cook all the time. So I like started learning, you know, just more about like cooking easy meals and using the crock pot I've had for like 15 years and never touched. So I kind of that interest in looking up recipes is like, well, I think I want to do a character who's a culinary student, and she's just moved to New York to go to culinary school, and it's just her poor life. I'm so mean to her. It's just chaos all the time. People are dying left and right, and she gets roped into helping a friend that's on the police force, and so her story has been fun to write.
What's the title of that one?
That one's the Eliza Carlisle mystery series. Okay. And there's 3 full books in that one and a novella that was a crossover with another writer series in the Kindle Worlds, which was an interesting experience. I didn't really like writing someone else's character.
Tell me about that. It was kind of weird.
It was one that kind of just popped up. A writer's group I'm a part of online, one of the authors was launching her Kindle World. And so she asked some of the authors to participate, and I was like, okay, like, this could be interesting, kind of try something new. And so she had, I think, 7 or 8 books in the series at that point. So I went through and read all the books in her series, so I knew what was going on. And it was, I really enjoyed her stuff, so it was fun to have a reason to just sit down and read. But then the idea of the Kindle Worlds is other people writing your characters or your world. So she was opening up the Sydney Rye world to us to write in. And so some kind of, you can take whatever approach you want, just use the world, use a character. With her world, it was, I mean, the normal world, though. So it was kind of like, well, I need to bring in one of her characters for it to make sense. And she happened to have one of her characters was a chef. And so I was like, well, and he's kind of a side character that didn't get a lot of screen time. So I felt a little bit better about using a side character than trying to write with one of her main characters. So I was just like, oh, I don't want to mess up her character.
So it's like fan fiction.
Yeah. And it was something that I think started with, I can't think, the guy who wrote Wool. He was one of the first big self-published authors that really, like, broke out on Kindle when they opened up KDP. I'll remember his name at, like, 9 o'clock tonight, probably.
Right.
But for his, he opened up his world. That was one of the first. And then some of the Marvel worlds, I believe you can write in. And it's expanded since then. There's a whole bunch you can write in. So it was an interesting experience, but it was just something where I was like, yeah, that was neat, but I don't think I would do it again. Because it was just, it is hard to write someone else's character and then try to match up your timeline with their timeline. So I don't know. I'm glad I did it because it was interesting, but
it would
I don't
be,
know. I like my
be.
Characters.
Right, just exactly.
Figuring it out.
You know your characters.
Yeah. It was an interesting challenge. And some people, that's what they've done for the majority of their writing is they do Kindle Worlds.
Right.
And I think that's a cool avenue to be open if that works with your style and how you like to write. So
well, I admire cool. that you keep trying all these other genres and avenues. That's pretty cool.
I hope they turn out successfully most of the time. But
well, I'm happy.
There's some of those that just get junked too. And
well, yes.
And that's all right.
That's part of the writing life. So what's your website that people can go and check out?
No, it's just my name. That's the benefit of having a strange name. It's easy to get your name on everything. So it's just delshariegladden.com.
Okay. Do you have something you could read for us?
So this is from the newest Eliza Carlisle book. And to kind of give a little bit of background where I'm jumping in here, she's involved in a case at a bakery that has a TV show. And they've had some murders and they're having a competition coming up. And so they're trying to catch this murderer before they have their competition because they think it's all going to kind of come to a head on live TV if they don't figure it out before then. So she's snooping around trying to find that. And she's just found out about this secret pass-through door between the regular bakery and where they film. So okay. She's off to investigate this here. Now, I said goodbye and reached for the door handle. Despite being half covered by a tray rack when we first approached it, the lock released easily and the door swung toward me. I paused there, wondering why on earth this door didn't have a keycard lock. Stepping into the dark hallway, I took in my surroundings in confusion. The red brick was something that belonged on the outside of the building, not the inside. I glanced up and squinted at the unfinished ceiling. Then I looked at it a little harder and realized it wasn't just unfinished. It looked as if it had been slapped together in a matter of hours and merely set in place. The little light filtering down into the hallway was from gaps between the ceiling joists and the walls. Confused by what I was seeing, I took out my phone and let my finger hover over the flashlight app. The door swung closed when I pulled my hand away and darkness flooded the small space. After taking a moment to let my eyes adjust, I crept down the length of the hall to where more light was seeping in. Instead of only being at where the ceiling and walls met, bits of light could be seen around what appeared to be a poorly made wall. Turning on the flashlight app, I gave up following light beams and tried to figure out what was going on with this disturbing space. No wonder nobody else liked to use it, especially in light of the murderers. It was the exact place an idiotic teen girl in a horror movie would get stabbed to death. Forget the dumb teenage girl. I was the only one stupid enough to investigate death traps like this. That thought froze me for a moment. Slowly, I pressed my back against the crappy wall and turned to face the hallway. I had to force myself not to close my eyes, but I couldn't resist crossing my fingers, even though Lady Luck and I were not usually on speaking terms. Shining my phone's flashlight out in front of me as far as I could, I breathed a sigh of relief when the shadowy corners remained free of hooded murderers. I took a few deep breaths to calm myself back down, then got back to puzzling out what on earth was going on with this creepy hallway. Given that I was in no way trained to investigate things like shoddy construction, I basically felt around for anything weird and wondered whether the gaps were intentional. I would have to remember later to ask Selma who did the construction, just to make sure Sonia never called them for repairs at the apartment building. That place had enough problems without some corner-cutting construction company building guaranteed murder boxes for the residents. Continuing to feel around, I paused only when I scraped my fingers across something metal. After inspecting my hands for damage and only finding a faint red line, I turned my light to the offending sharp edge. At first, I didn't know what to think of the hinge. It didn't make sense to have a hinge on a wall, until I saw a matching hinge and realized it was not a wall, but a door. Moving to the other side, I peeked through the gap, and my suspicion was confirmed by the presence of a chain and a padlock. That answered my question about why there were exterior bricks in an interior hallway. It wasn't a hallway, but an alley. Now I had a new question of why this alley had been closed off and why the doors between the two sides of the bakery weren't locked like everything else. That was two questions, actually, which seemed about right for me. Answer one question and end up with two more. Was that how it worked for Gordy, too, or was I just special like that? Shaking my head, I made my way to the door that would take me to the show side of the bakery. Getting 5 minutes alone with Selma today was going to be on par with Megan growing a heart. Maybe Morales could help me corner her. Lying in wait by her car didn't seem like a particularly good idea when there was a killer running around. Twisting the doorknob, I was momentarily confused when my hand jerked to a stop after only a quarter twist. I twisted it again, and again, with no result. Evan used this door all the time. Why was it locked now? Who had locked it? Another question. Annoyed, I spun around to go back the way I'd come. Except, that door was locked too.
Wow.
So, just a little bit of the trouble I keep putting Eliza in.
How fun.
She never gets a break, though.
That's okay. That's what she's for. Well, that piqued my interest.
Good.
What's the title of that one again?
That one is Instigator.
Instigator.
So all of the names of the books are things she gets called by other people for causing trouble.
Oh, I get it.
Which is getting to be a bit of a challenge to come up with new titles.
She'll tell you when the next one comes. How funny. So when you write these series, do you write all one series and then you move to the next one, or do you intermingle them? Or
I should just write all one series. No, that's kind of my current goal right now, is to finish up some of the series I've left hanging after going back to school, and kind of my writing has slowed down considerably since then, and especially the last couple months. But I have a couple that people keep asking me, when are you going to have a new book out? I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm trying. So Ghost Host is one of those. I have the third book planned, but I haven't had much time to work on it. And then the other one I keep getting questions about is the second half of Memory's Edge, which is just a two-part series. And I probably have six chapters written of the second book, but it's the one I keep getting asked about, so I am working on it. I'm trying to finish it up. But, yeah, I always get stuck on the last book of anything. It's always, I get worried I forgot something or didn't, you know, consider something I brought up in page two. And
right.
So I tend to take a little longer getting that last book finally done and wrapped up.
And how do people contact you to ask about this? Do they write you, contact you through your website? Or?
Yeah, either through my website or usually on Facebook.
How fun.
I don't really love Twitter and a lot of the other social media. I kind of am on there and try to hold a presence here and there, but most of what I've built up as far as like fan interaction has been on Facebook. Just a little easier, I think.
How fun, though, to create people that become real to other people, and they want to know, well, where's she going to go with that? Why did you do that to her?
I know, and I feel bad making people wait. It's like, I'm sorry, I just haven't had time lately.
What are you working on right now?
So I'm trying to work on the second part of the Memory's Edge duet, and then I've got a couple other books planned that have like a chapter or two here and there, but I'm kind of keeping them on the back burner till I wrap a few things up. And then with the Eliza books, they're so much fun to write that I usually am working on one of those in between other things when I need a break from, like, with Memory as Edge, it's a little bit more serious. It's more of a dramatic romance. So when I need a break and something a little lighter, then I'll go back and write a little bit on Eliza, because she's just fun to mess with.
How fun. So you can switch gears like that.
Most of the time. I usually have to go back and read a little bit to kind of get back into the groove. But I like having at least a couple things going on. So if I do get stuck, I can jump back to something else and get out of my head.
So you said that your writing has changed and you've been changing genres. So what do you see in the future? What would be your masterwork, do you see?
I don't know. I've done a lot of more like serious, dramatic stuff, but I've really enjoyed writing things with a lighter side too. It kind of just depends what really speaks to people. You know, when I started writing Invisible, it was just kind of one of those random thoughts that you're like, oh, I wonder if, you know, how would this go? If your imaginary friend wasn't really imaginary, just you're the only one who could see him, but he is real. And it was kind of one that, you know, I did not plan out at all. I really had no clue where it was going in the end. It was just a fun idea to run with for a while. And that's what, I mean, that's still usually my best-selling one. And I think it's just one that, you know, for whatever reason, people really connect with what Mason goes through. Just that, I mean, he literally is invisible. So that's tough to deal with. But I think, especially for the younger age group, those feelings of being invisible when you are right there in front of everybody, I think got really connected with a lot of teens in a way I wasn't expecting. And it really kind of, you know, got to me a little bit when I would have, you know, these young teens like telling me how much they enjoyed it and how much the characters meant to them. And, you know, it was really just like, wow, like it was actually, it really made a difference for some people. But knowing that, like, it made a difference to someone else, that's what, for me at least, keeps me going when I get, you know, bogged down with marketing or rejections or, you know, all the not-so-fun parts of writing.
The other side of writing.
Yeah. Yes. The part none of us really like that much, but right. is necessary, unfortunately.
It is. Again, your website is delsherregladden.com, D-E-L-S-H-E-R-E-E, Gladden. So do you have workshop and critique groups, or how do you do that?
I used to do a lot on a website called The Next Big Writer, where you could post and then get feedback and then leave feedback. So it was kind of like a point system. The more feedback you left, the more you could post. So it worked well to make sure, you know, you are participating and not just posting a bunch of stuff. But it was time consuming. Yes. So I don't really do much there, but I did build some good friendships with some other writers that we've gone back and forth just on our own quite a bit. And then over the last several years, I've built up a group of beta readers who I can send the early drafts to, and they'll help me look through and
trust them.
Pick things out. Yeah.
Yes.
And some of them, you know, you get the like, oh, it's great, I loved it. And you're like, and? Okay. And what needs to be? So some of them you kind of have to train to be, you know, critiquers and not just readers.
Right.
You slowly get that group, you know, through some online interactions, and it's cool because the group that I rely on the most are from all over the world, and so I get different perspectives, different age groups. I mean, have anywhere from teenagers to, you know, retired readers who want something fun and productive to do. Like, great. Give it a try.
That's great. Well, I thank you for coming to the studio and talking with us. Today in the studio, I've been joined by Delsherie Gladden, talking about her many, many books and her busy, busy life. Thank you, Sheree.
I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me come by.
Thank you, Delsherie. This is Tracy Hales Vass, right on Four Corners. You can contact me at writeon@sanjuancollege.edu.